The Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app. Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. We've got a great show for you. What a beautiful day it is today. This is why we live in Michigan. In this half hour of the show, we'll be having cantor Michael Smolash, who's going to be doing a concert at the Berman in a couple of weeks, and we'll be talking to him about Jewish music. The portion of the week is the portion of Korach, and continuing the good old Bible story stuff in the book of Numbers. We've got an awesome Hasidic story, great Jewish music. You're not going to believe some of the stuff we're playing today in Jewish music. Before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. Israeli security forces have been searching around Hebron since Friday after three yeshiva students went missing. The Shin Bet is treating the teens' disappearance as a kidnapping by terrorists because their cell phones stopped broadcasting location signals and a burnt-out car was found in the area. A masked Arab terrorist opened fire on IDF soldiers stationed at a checkpoint near Ramallah. The terrorist fired eight times from an M16 rifle and fled the scene. No injuries were reported among the soldiers. Israeli Air Force jets killed Mohammed Awar and wounded two others in an airstrike in central Gaza. Awar had been involved in rocket attacks on Israel and has also served as a member of the Hamas police force in Gaza. Two Jewish teenagers were tear gassed. This is all French news now coming up. Two Jewish teenagers were tear gassed by a gang of North Africans in the Paris suburb of Sarcelles. French Jews are making aliyah to Israel at over 300% the rate of last year. A group of six black teenagers used a taser on a Jewish boy identified who was attacked for his Jewish appearance and an apparent anti-Semitic assault. And Tagli Birthright expects over 1,000 people from Israel to travel to from France to travel to Israel this year. 100 people traveled last year from France. In other news, an Israeli military court convicted a Palestinian teenager in the stabbing death of an Israeli soldier on a public bus. The Palestinian, aged 16, from the West Bank city of Jenin, told military interrogators that he had planned to kill a soldier in revenge for relatives jailed in Israeli jails for terror activities. Former Speaker of Knesset Reuven Rivlin is Israel's 10th president, succeeding Shimon Peres. The Knesset elects the president to a 10-year term, which is mostly ceremonial. The Australian Foreign Ministry dropped the word occupied in reference to East Jerusalem. Australian Attorney General George Brandeis said that the description of East Jerusalem as occupied is a term freighted with pejorative implications, which is neither appropriate or useful, unquote. And finally, Germany was ordered to pay the heirs of the Schocken department store. They did the Schocken books, if you recall, when they moved here. So Germany ordered the heirs of the Schocken department store chain paid nearly $68 million in restitution for properties confiscated by the Nazis in 1938. Brothers Simon and Salman Schocken opened numerous department stores in Germany before World War II. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000. Or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. We have online cantor Michael Smolesh, who's going to be doing a concert June 23rd. We'll talk about that. We'll give details at the end of the interview or in the middle somewhere. How are you, Michael?
Baruch Hashem. How are you, Herschel?
Good. Thank God. Thank God. I like talking about Jewish music, getting different people's opinion on it. You're giving a concert called Hitting the High Notes.
Uh-huh.
You're a tenor, right?
I am a tenor. Yeah.
Yes.
You wouldn't know from my speaking voice, but that's what they tell me.
Okay. So you can hit the high notes. So,
we do our best, yeah.
Okay, so anyway, so it says a Jewish musical review of the greatest hits, including selections from Yiddish musical theater, Irving Berlin, Gershwin, Broadway, Leonard Bernstein, Simon and Garfunkel, and Debbie Friedman. Now, that's a full range of music.
Uh-huh.
How did we categorize all this to be Jewish music?
Oh, it comes from Howard Lubavitch's lectures that he's been giving, and he's been covering a lot of different styles of music from the 20th century in North America. So they wanted to create a concert that would cap that in a way and cover mm-hmm. everything that he was talking about. So
okay,
really anything that's from a Jewish composer or Jewish writer would count.
Okay, just Howard Lubavitch is the director of the Cohen Haddow Department of Judaic Studies, Center for Judaic Studies at Wayne, very good buddy of mine as well. That's a pretty broad definition. I don't play Simon and Garfunkel or Gershwin or Berlin or Broadway stuff mostly on my show
uh-huh.
because, in my opinion, it just because somebody's Jewish, Bob Dylan, for example, has never had any time on my show either, but just because a Jew wrote it doesn't make it Jewish music. It's got to be sort of like Jewish to be Jewish music, wouldn't you say so? Or maybe you could argue with me, Michael.
I understand. I think there's different circles of influence in terms of what Jewish music means. So certainly, from a traditional perspective, when you're at a high holiday service, you wouldn't want to hear Bob Dylan's Blowin' in the Wind. And I agree with you completely there. However, as you go out, I think people have, we're all kind of sitting at a table, and sometimes we have different events at the table. And so, when it's not a high holiday service or not in a synagogue setting, but rather in a concert setting, then sometimes the definition can certainly be broadened a little. When I say a pop song written by a Jewish person, I wouldn't necessarily use that in a religious ceremony, but I would use it in a concert setting with the DSO. And, part of me is really proud that a Jewish composer, had the success and wrote something. And even if the song itself you wouldn't call as Jewish liturgical music, it expresses something about a Jewish person. I kind of like that when I'm in a concert setting.
Okay, fair enough. I'm playing this half hour, or after we get done with this, I got a request from someone that since lately I've been playing what would be classified as like Yiddish fusion, or klezmer fusion music.
Uh-huh.
Some of it has like it's klezmer progressions with Latin beats, or klezmer with some jazz riffs in it. So somebody said, listen, can't we just get something more traditional? So I went back, and I found, just to go na-na-na-na-na, you want something traditional? Okay, fine. 1913, written by Irving Berlin, sung by the immortal, who could forget, Morris Burkhart. The song's called The Yiddish Professor, and it's basically, it's a Jewish song of the times from 1913, and it sounds like everything else they were playing on those little wax cylinders
uh-huh.
from 1913. So, I mean, if you're going to include, say, Berlin and Gershwin and Simon and Garfunkel all in the same concert, so then do we reflect that Jewish music is similar to, say, like Jewish architecture? It just reflects what's going around us?
Huh. Yeah, I think that's a good parallel, and I think that's true about Jewish civilization in general. If you look at what we call Jewish music from a musical perspective, it all comes from our host societies. The musical material comes from our host society, except maybe cantillation and a little bit of psalmody that we think we kind of know how it was chanted in sort of parallelism. But if you look at the modes that we think of as Jewish, if you look at the Hasidic Nigurim that we think of it as quintessentially Jewish, musically that material comes from Eastern Europe and from the modes that were popular there. So, when you look at history, that is exactly what happens. Judaism lives in a host culture. Then for whatever reason, we leave the host culture, moves on, and yet we retain parts of it, and we elevate them, and we make them into something holy and something Jewish. So while it's a little compressed in North America in that we're listening to jazz and to pop now, it is related, I think.
Mm-hmm. We are, if you're tuning in, just tuning in, we're talking with cantor Michael Smolesh. He's going to be doing a concert at the Berman with a DSO ensemble. Now, the word ensemble is nebulous. It could be anything between six and, I would say, maybe 40 instruments make up an ensemble. So how many pieces are we talking about, Michael?
Oh, well, the DSO has been very generous. I think we're something around 19 or 20 pieces, so it'll be a beautiful, it's going to be a good string sound, but we also have a combo in there that can do kind of klezmer and jazz. Teddy Abrams, who's the conductor, is going to sit down at the piano, and he's a great musician as well, who, can conduct Copland's clarinet concerto and then sit down and play a great klezmer set with some musicians. So you're going to get a real mix.
Mm-hmm. Now, Yiddish theater is not yet made the comeback that people, Yiddishists, might like to see. I mean, Yiddish, we've been talking about, this is one of the things we've been following over the last 18 years of this show, is the comeback of Yiddish. I just as an aside, it's very interesting that in the 1950s, Gershon Jacobson was going to open up a newspaper, and he wanted to know if he should do it in English or Yiddish.
Uh-huh.
So the Rebbe said to him, "What's the problem?" He said, "Well, they tell me that Yiddish is a dying language." So the Rebbe responded, "They said that 50 years ago, and they're going to say it 50 years from now."
Uh-huh.
So, and it isn't, and it hasn't. There's always seems to be this, like, this, we're sort of like now at the top of the sine curve, you might say, with Yiddish and interest. And I've had people on the show, and we've talked at great lengths with Yiddish and the language and the culture and whatnot. Yiddish theater just hasn't made it. And between you and me, I find a lot of the Yiddish theater songs really cringy.
Yeah, I get it. I worked in a professional music theater in English, right, in Toronto and around Canada. And it is a commercial genre, right? So, you get some really, really wonderful pieces, and you get some shows inevitably every decade that transcend that and that seem timeless. But with that, you get a lot of, very commercial, very just, let's be entertaining kind of material. And Yiddish theater was no different. If you think about the immigrant population that they were catering to, people had hard days and hard lives, and they wanted to go see a fun show that would make them feel good. And people were mainly aiming for that. So, yeah, I can see how klezmer is coming back, and maybe it has deeper artistic roots, perhaps. My interest in Yiddish theater is simply because I grew up speaking Yiddish and learning Yiddish in school, and also worked in musical theater. So now, as a cantor, it just goes together so beautifully. So, for instance, I do Ich Sing, famous Molly Picon song, but I do it with a nice soft shoe routine that really brings it together. So nobody thinks that song is, one of the greatest pieces written in the 20th century. It's just a beautiful song. However, I think when you do it with joy and you share it with people, it has its place, and people love it.
Uh-huh. So you're going to be the catalyst of the revival of music, of Jewish, of Yiddish music theater, then, Michael Smolesh.
When you're a singer, you just do what you love. And if you love what you're singing, then hopefully the audience will love it for that moment. What happens outside of that, I can't say. I just love this material, and I hope that people enjoy when I share it.
Yeah, I mean, when I think of music theater, I'm thinking such immortal songs such as The Day That Henry Ford Apologized to Me, which is
How much is that pickle in the window?
Yeah, indeed, so Goldstein owes me $97. I mean, so all these wonderful songs. Indeed. So now, moving on just a little bit, maybe we can back to this idea. I want to talk about Michael Smolesh and your journey to where you are today. So if you could tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, and a little bit about your background.
Sure. I grew up in Montreal and wanted to go into science in school, and then realized after one semester of physics at McGill that maybe not a good idea, and switched to music, which I'd always been involved in, and then worked in music theater for 15 years and was always a soloist at synagogues. I sung at Shir HaShamayim for many years in Montreal. And when I moved to Toronto, I got involved with a Reform temple there and was their soloist for 7 years for high holidays and services and many things. And that kind of won my soul over, and I decided I wanted to make that permanent. So I did a certification program that the school graciously offers to people that are already working. And when I completed that, this pulpit here at Temple Israel in Michigan became available, and it really is an extraordinary organization with a great, great team of clergy, really unique in many ways. So I just jumped at the chance, and it was a good fit, and I've been here now for 10 years, and you know, so happy serving a community and raising a family. You know, my daughter and son are 6 and 9 now, just couldn't be happier.
As a chazan, usually the cantor in the synagogue is like the youth director or education coordinator. You're doing that kind of stuff too?
You know, often that is the case, and that's one of the unique things about Temple Israel is that along with our clergy, we have really the most talented and dedicated level of staff that you can imagine. So we have a full-time education director who's a rabbi. We have one of our rabbis who's a full-time youth director along with other staff. And we've got people that do. So all the things that I would be doing, trying to put a bulletin out, trying to arrange programming, we actually have people that know how to do that here doing it, and I can focus on the musical side of everything happening here and how that can add to our spiritual lives.
So you just get to sing?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay, singing for your supper.
Sing and be there for people, you know, in all the ways that we need to.
Okay, now somewhere, you and I are actually good friends.
Yeah.
And somewhere along the line, someplace, did you have an epiphany or something and started getting more involved with Judaism?
I wouldn't say more involved with Judaism because I've been involved with Judaism for the past 10 years pretty much full time. However, this is now about a year and a half ago. I'd always been interested in Kabbalah and, you know, on the spiritual side in the past, always, you know, did meditation when I did karate and read all kinds of different, you know, books. And I picked up Label Wolf's book.
Another one of my good buddies, yes.
Yes, it's wonderful. So Practical Kabbalah is the name of it. And it just so appealed to me. You know, everything that I thought wasn't within Judaism, which was, the spiritual side. If you picture Buddhist meditation or yoga practices and things like that, that really did exist in Judaism beautifully. So, of course, started studying with him from a distance, and you as well, people should know, and some other rabbis around town. And, I find that the spiritual side of Judaism just lets so much meaning and light flow into the ritual side and the technical side. I'm thrilled that I found a new grounding on the spiritual side from Kabbalah and Hasidus, and hope that that a lot of people are benefiting from it in the different ways that I carry out my work here.
You've actually adopted a lot of taking on the commandments, which doesn't necessarily go with Reform Judaism. Any contradictions, people saying anything to you, Michael Smolesh?
I think that there's a social norm that's always a little funny when someone breaks. So absolutely, you touch on, you know, not many people in Reform synagogues are putting on tefillin or wearing a kippah all the time. There's certain mitzvot that just socially haven't been associated with some Reform temples. However, they're not counter to Reform thinking. Reform thinking is simply, each person or each community has their relationship with the Torah and with the mitzvot, and they struggle with each mitzvah, with each relationship. They compare it to their personal value system. They compare it to the value system of their family and their community, and they work out what their relationship is going to be with that mitzvah. So even in Reform Judaism, there isn't any mitzvah that's off limits. There's no mitzvah that's somebody else's property. Our rabbis here are really beautiful in their leadership, and that they said, you know, I had a conversation with one. He said, you know, do whatever you want to do. That's not. And another one that was teaching, you know, in a class, that a Reform Jew doesn't look like this or look like that, right? Each Reform Jew has their own relationship with the mitzvah. So certainly, sometimes it turns someone's head when they see me doing this or that. But ultimately, everyone recognizes that progressive Judaism has room for every expression of Judaism, obviously including observing the mitzvot.
The Lubavitch Rebbe was one who had said he didn't like the term, he didn't like adjectival Judaism. By that I mean Orthodox Judaism, conservative Judaism, Reform Judaism, Renewal Judaism, Humanistic Judaism. Get rid of the adjective. There's only just Judaism. And being that Judaism is an expression of divine will, which is infinite, so wherever you get on is a very good thing. And whatever you do, every good thing, the line is, every good thing is a good thing. So the idea that we don't hold exclusivity to doing good things. So
Absolutely. I mean, you know, an infinite God, we imagine, must be able to have infinite relationships. So whatever, you know, wherever we are, any improvement is always an improvement.
Yeah, I've often said that Judaism is, or being Jewish is like an egg. Some people like their eggs hard. Some people like their eggs soft and runny. I mean, you know, yeah. So, but whatever, however you like your Judaism, that's the Judaism you're going to have. Whatever relationship you want to make with God is going to be the relationship you get with God. If you're just tuning in, we are talking with Cantor Michael Smolesh, who's going to be doing a concert, which is sponsored by, it's called Hitting the High Notes. This is on Monday, June 23rd at 7 p.m., the Berman Center for the Performing Arts. Tickets are $25. Call the Berman, 248-661-1900, sponsored by the Cohen Haddo Center for Judaic Studies, Jewish Federation, Temple Israel of Detroit, Symphony Orchestra, FedEd, We Deliver Adult Jewish Education, and the JCC. So a lot of people put this together.
I think we have more sponsors than musicians, potentially. But indeed.
Well, if everybody who sponsors it at least sends at least two representatives, and you've got like half an audience right there. Okay. Tell us about soloist Neil Michaels, who's going to be performing with you, Michael.
You know, you couldn't find a better mensch or a more beautiful voice or you know, a more incredible colleague. He's been fantastic. He and I were just, you know, each other's right-hand men for the past 10 years. He also was working in theater and opera. He's a Juilliard graduate, so musically just sensational. And, you know, same thing. He's got two kids around my kid's age and is a beautiful dad. And, you know, you meet him and you just love him. He has that kind of a presence. And he absolutely envelops an audience when he sings with both his rich voice and his spirit. He's an incredible guy. So So you'll love it. I every time I sing with him, it just makes me smile on the outside and the inside.
Also a tenor?
No, he's a baritone.
Oh, okay. So you'll be playing off each other back and forth then.
Yes. And like you, when I'm standing next to him, everyone thinks I look short. So
he's a big guy.
People come up to me and they say, "Oh, I had no idea you were," because they think I'm, you know, 5'6" when I stand next to him.
Okay. Fair enough. I just got sidetracked from my next question. Anyway, so the could you give us like a rundown, like what exactly you're going to be, the pieces that you've chosen?
Yeah, the program is, you know, some Yiddish theater, like I mentioned, Ich Zing, Ich Hob Dich Zu Viel Lieb, Yiddish Mama. There's going to be a klezmer set that Teddy's just going to play with some of the musicians in the band who are good kind of multi-instrumental players. We've got some Irving Berlin, Blue Skies, George Gershwin, Irving Berlin, Alexander's Ragtime Band. So Much Watch Over Me is a good, nice Gershwin song that people recognize, All the Things You Are. We're including a Copland clarinet concerto that's going to be, you know, a little more chance for the orchestra to show off their chops. You know, Maria, stuff from Bye Bye Birdie, a little Simon and Garfunkel, Bob Dylan, you know, Hallelujah by Leonard Cohen, and a little surprise by two young artists for the finale, two kids that will join us for the finale.
Mm-hmm. Any Nagunim?
Oh, you know, I would love to include a Nigun, but we did plan this with like a whole pack of people, and you know, we also have to look at what we can get, you know, orchestrations for that work for this ensemble and all that. So, unfortunately, I won't be able to share any of the Nigunim we've been studying in this one.
Mm-hmm. And the two of you are not going to be showing off a cappella because that would leave 20 people just sitting on the stage looking at you.
Yeah, it does seem a waste to have all those musicians sitting there and not have them make a beautiful sound.
Mm-hmm. No cantoral music, no Kol Nidre or, you know, Avinu Malkeinu's or any of that stuff.
No, you know, we didn't include it really. You know, this concert we wanted to aim for really what would be, you know, people's favorite songs that they would just you know, enjoy and sit back and kind of go down memory lane. Certainly, you know, people have wonderful memories with liturgical music, but it just didn't make it into you know, the vision for this one.
Okay, I think that's just going to about wrap it up for us today. Our guest has been Michael Smolesh, who is going to be doing a concert together with Cantor Neil Michaels and an ensemble from the DSO, Monday, June 23rd, 7 p.m. at the Berman Center for the Performing Arts, which is located in the JCC. Tickets are $25, 248-661-1900, or go to theberman.org. Michael, thank you so much for coming on and enlightening us and telling us about yourself, and continued success.
Herschel, thanks for including this in your show, and I look forward to learning with you next week.
Okay, take care. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Do you or someone you know have an addiction to opiates? Ready to take your life back but don't have the time for a long inpatient program? MDS Drug Detox is a team of physicians with extensive experience in the field of rapid drug detox under anesthesia. MDS is the nation's only rapid opiate detox under anesthesia facility with the same doctors, RNs, and certified paramedics attending the entire drug detox process. MDS Drug Detox is safe and effective. Their goal is to provide the best, the safest, and the most economical way to free you from your addiction. MDS uses the highest standards of care and the best FDA-approved medications. MDS Drug Detox understands what your concerns are. Make the call today, 888-637-6968, or go online to www.mdsdrugdetox.com. That's 888-637-6968, MDS Drug Detox. Herschel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. I suppose some Yiddish music would be appropriate right now. We're going to do something actually. This is Gad Elbaz, brand new, brand spanking new. This is less than a week old. Everybody has to do something about Mashiach because we are, after all, on the verge of the Messianic era. The Messiah's arrival is imminent. And this is Gad Elbaz singing Mashiach.
הרחמן הוא יחיינו ויזכנו ויקרבנו לימות המשיח ובניין בית המקדש הוא חיי העולם הבא.
Assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Hey, Shul Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. As I said in my interview, I got a letter from on www.rabbifinman.com. A woman contacted me by the name of Sylvia Bernstein, who professes to be a klezmer fanaticist, a Yiddish music fanaticist, and complained of the genre of Yiddish music that I was playing, that it wasn't really authentic. And she wanted something that went back to the good old days, not this new stuff. So I took the challenge, and it's sort of kind of like I put my tongue right in my cheek, because this is just for you, Sylvia. This is 1913. The song is called The Yiddish Professor. It is composed by Irving Berlin and sung by the inimitable Maurice Burkhart.
A B Cone, he went to Paris and Germany and learned how to play on the piano. Now he's making money out of sight, giving concerts every night. Come along. For the half of a dollar, you can get in the hall, sit in the gallery, and you'll be glad to pay when you hear young Abraham play. Come and hear the Yiddish professor, Mr. A.B. Cohn. Come and hear him tickling the piano in a first-class Yiddish tone. I would never kiss him on the lips, but I'd kiss him on the fingertips. Oy, such a much is the torch that lingers. In his Yiddish fingers, he can make a second-hand piano sound the same as new. And more yet, too, he can play some sentimental melodies and break the heart of a stone. When his melodies begin to pour, then your wishbone wishes for some more. Come along and listen to the Yiddish professor, Mr. A.B. Cohn. A.B. Cohn, he wears his hair like a nectar. It's as long as his arm. He never cuts it off, and everyone who sees his hair looks and hollers, "It's a bear." Come along, have a look at the diamond that he wears on his hand when he is fingering, and just to see that gent, makes you think of 7%. Come and hear the Yiddish professor, Mr. A.B. Cohn. Come and hear him tickling the piano in a first-class Yiddish tone. I would never kiss him on the lips, but I'd kiss him on the fingertips. Oy, such a much is the touch that lingers in his Yiddish fingers. He can make a second-hand piano sound the same as new. And more yet, too, he can play some sentimental melodies and break the heart of a stone. When his melodies begin to pour, then your wishbone wishes for some more. Come along and listen to the Yiddish professor, Mr. A.B. Cohn. A.B. Cohn, he plays Hungarian rhapsodies without any notes. Like Paderewski wouldn't let me say, his only tool is a wooden piano stool. Come along, take a look at his fingers. They're insured, everyone, $5,000 each, and someday understand, I'm afraid he'll cut off his hand. Come and hear the Yiddish professor, Mr. A.B. Cohn, come and hear him tickling the piano in a voiceless Yiddish tone. I would never kiss him on the lips, but I'd kiss him on the fingertips. Oy, such a much is the touch that lingers in his Yiddish fingers. He can make a second-hand piano sound the same as new. And more yet, too, he can play some sentimental melodies and break the heart of a stone. When his melodies begin is a paw. Then your wishbone wishes for some more. Come along and listen to the Yiddish professor, Mr. A.B. Cole.
The Art Studio of Oak Park is now accepting students. Whether you're a real beginner or have been at it for a lifetime, the Art Studio of Oak Park has something for you. All levels welcome, all ages welcome. Private tutoring or small friendly classes. Flexible hours available. The Art Studio of Oak Park is very affordable. Make your life better. Put art into your life. The Art Studio of Oak Park offers lessons in a strictly kosher environment. Call today, 248-542-5087. That's 248-542-5087. It's great having an art room right in the neighborhood.
Harry Schulfinman here, you're listening to the Jewish Hour. There was a reference in that last song that when you hear him play, you want to hear that you'll want to be the 7%. I have no idea what that is a reference to. If you know, drop me a line at rabbifinman.com, and as a token of my appreciation, I'll send you a free CD. Jewish music, of course. Coming up, something totally completely different. This is Schlockrock. I've got my Shabbos, so I've got my Shabbos, so let's see if you got yours. Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Hey, Schulzman, and here you're listening to the Jewish Hour. This week we are reading the portion of Korach. That would be the Torah portion read in the synagogue this upcoming Shabbos. It's in the book of Numbers, chapters 16 and following. The first part of the portion involves the rebellion of Korach, Moses' cousin. It says in Pirkei Avos, the Ethics of Our Fathers, that any disagreement which is not for the sake of heaven will have no lasting permanence. And gives an example, for example, the rebellion of Korach, the disagreement that Korach had. Now, Korach was a little bit different than a disagreement. I mean, it says, what's a disagreement that is for the sake of heaven? Like the arguments between the yeshiva, the school of Hillel, and the yeshiva, the school of Shammai, that they interpreted Jewish law differently. And now, according in this day, we follow the laws of the school of Hillel. When Messiah comes, we'll be following Shammai. So we see that they both were right. But here, Korach, well, he wound up getting sucked into a hole in the ground, him and his family and all of his wealth. But how do we call this, how do we even associate this with as this is a rebellion? This is not a disagreement. There's an interesting outlook on how to interpret this story of Korach. It says that Korach comes, and he has basically taken some of the principles that he has been taught by Moses and throws it back at him. He says, listen, we just learned about the mitzvah of tzitzis. We talked about that last week, the tassels that one wears on the corners of one's garments. If you want to know more about tzitzis, well, go to rabbifinman.com, click on the radio page, and it'll be archived. Last week's show. Yes, indeedy. One of the things that it mentions over there is that you have to have a special blue thread woven into the tassel. So Korach comes and he shows up with a totally blue garment. And he says, do I need to put the tzitzis on this? Do I have to put the tassels on? So Moses says, of course, yeah. So he says, look, the whole thing's blue. Shouldn't the whole thing blue not need just one thread of blue? And the same thing also, mezuzah, the scroll which is put on the door, as an indication that the Almighty is guarding our doorways. He says, I have this house. It's totally completely filled with Torah scrolls. Does it need two portions, two paragraphs of a Torah stuck on a door? Moses, of course, said, yeah. And he says, listen, this Judaism stuff is kind of strange. You're making all this up. I mean, logically, it's just not working, Moses. And oh, by the way, since we're talking logic, you came down the mountain right before the giving of the Torah, 3 days before, and proclaimed that the Jews are a nation of priests, a holy people. And here, well, you basically said we're all holy, but some of us are holier than others, to paraphrase a line from the end of a book. This isn't right. What you're doing is wrong. We should all be able to climb that mountain and speak to God. Now, in 2 weeks ago's portion, there were two people that prophesied. And when Joshua said, Moses, you got to stop them. You're the oracle. You can't have them prophesizing. Moses said, I wish that everybody would be a prophet. Because that way, what was Moses thinking? I wouldn't have to be doing so much because you guys would be talking to God directly. I wouldn't have to be like the intermediary. Hello. We know the whole thing caused like lots of domestic dissent in Moses' house because Moses had to be on duty all the time. He couldn't even go home and say hello to his wife. So Moses was happy. Here it is. Now Korach is challenging him.
At this point, it says, Moses says, listen, God, don't listen to them. Don't even take into account. God needs Moses' advice. And then there's the idea that Moses fell on his face when he heard these words. People in the Bible are falling on their face all the time. They see an angel, they fall on the face. They talk to God, they fall on the face. They hear good news, they fall on their face. They hear bad news, they fall on the face. People just falling on their face. Thank God we don't fall on our faces nowadays. You could get scratched up, you could hurt yourself. Maybe in the desert where it was nice and soft sand, you could fall on your face. But nowadays on the concrete, it might be a little harder. What was his deal? So the first Lubavitcher Rebbe had a similar case where someone challenged him. And he also sat and thought for a minute, which is what the idea of falling on one's face in this instance was, and said, yeah, you're wrong. Moses had to look and say, you know, is this guy coming from a good place? Here it is. He's a special person, Korach. This is no slouch. Korach, when I talk to people about the portion of Korach, I say to them, knowing what you know about Moses, would you lead a rebellion against Moses? And everybody, unequivocally, let's just check. Ben, my trusty board op, you know anything about Moses?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Would you, knowing what you know about Moses, lead a rebellion against Moses?
Never.
Never.
Never,
okay?
In a million years.
With unequivocally. You didn't even have to think for a while.
I don't see how you could cross the Red Sea, see all the 10 plagues, and see God's blessing on Moses, because it's not challenging Moses, it's challenging God.
Okay. Now, Korach, he's a biblical guy. He's got a portion named after the Torah, in the Torah, named after him. Korach saw prophetically. Notice that adverb there, prophetically. When was the last time you saw something prophetically? I prophetically predicted that my teenagers were going to bother me sometime in the near future, but that's besides the point. And I also prophetically predicted that they're going to ask me for money. But, you know, like I tell people, I've been trying to convince my kids for almost 30 years that DAD and ATM are not the same letters. But anyway, Korach saw prophetically that his great-grandson, that's only four generations, was going to be the prophet Samuel. And about the prophet Samuel, it says in the book of Psalms that Samuel in his generation was as great as Moses and Aaron put together in their generation. Not that he was as great as Moshe and Aaron, but for his generation, he was as good as it got. He was not only the Moses of his generation, he was the Moses and the Aaron of his generation. So Korach said, I got a son like that coming out of me. It's got to work. How else could it have such a prominent son? There was the problem, though. What was this problem? The problem was, as the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says, in Ethics of Our Fathers says, it wasn't L'shem Shemayim. He wasn't doing it for God. He wasn't trying to make Judaism as a whole better. He wasn't trying to make the world a better place. He was not trying to create a Dir B'Tachtonim, a dwelling place for God, and elevate the physical and mundane realm to the holy. He was doing it for Korach. He was doing it's the number one first, the me first deal. There is a very prolific attitude among people, which is totally and completely wrong. That is that I have to be the one doing the job. Really, bottom line, it's not the I have to be doing the job. It's that the job get done. And if you could be the facilitator to get the job done, it doesn't matter that your picture is not in the newspaper and people aren't standing up and applauding and you don't get the press and you don't get the accolades or the plaques. What matters is that the job get done. That's where Korach was lacking. We're going to take a quick commercial break and be right back with an awesome story. Don't go away. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Specs Howard from the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. We're happy to sponsor The Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding for The Jewish Hour comes from its sponsors, it's listeners like you that help keep The Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. That's 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Your help is greatly appreciated.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Quick PSA. Join the Greater Detroit Jewish Community for an evening dedicated to the Lubavitcher Rebbe of righteous memory on the occasion of the 20th anniversary of his passing. Keynote address by the Honorable Joseph Lieberman. He's a senator. Music performance by Hasidic flautist Yehuda Piamente, Monday, June 23rd. Dinner 6 p.m. at the Suburban Collection Showplace on Grand River in Novi. Covert is $36 for dinner, which is nothing. For more information, call 248-660-9060, 660-9060. If you or your organization has something that it wants to promote, drop a line at www.rabbifinman.com. Speaking of which, if you want to get in touch with me, rabbifinman.com. Want to hear something that was on this show that you forgot? Missed last show, about a month's worth less of shows? Go right to the archive, the radio page on rabbifinman.com. We also have the Hasidic U story, the U Parsha, the E Parsha, all various media of yours truly conveying Judaism and hopefully an entertaining and educational manner for your Jewish and spiritual growth. And of course, the very, very, very important donations page. Go right now to rabbifinman.com. Click on the donations page, click a number, or write your own number in. It's all very safe, secure, and donate today. We need it. We're in the middle of June. We're not even close to paying for June, folks. We've been on the air 18 years. I've been doing this for 18 years, the last couple of minutes of the show, begging people. It's not nice to beg. My mother used to always say, my older sister used to say, it's not nice to beg. So I don't want to have to beg. If you just get into the habit every month donating a couple of bucks, it's great. Those people that every once in a while drop $1,000 on the account, that's really great. But I'm not discounting the threes and fives and 20s and 36s. They're all good. So go do that. Don't like using internet for your bill paying? I understand. Send your contribution to The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. The Almighty will be glad you did. Your listeners here of the Jewish Hour will be glad you did. I'll be glad you did. And you'll be glad that you did. We've got a quick story. Back in 1967, the Lubavitcher Rebbe instituted something called the Friday Night Candlelighting Campaign. On Friday night, Jewish women and girls, the Rebbe said, from age 3, because the matriarch, Rebecca, started lighting Shabbos candles at age 3. To usher in the Sabbath in order to bring a little bit of spiritual light into a dark world. There was something in New York called release time. It's still going on. Every Wednesday, 2 o'clock, kids get to go study some religious subject outside of school. They're released. So they made a whole big contest in this one class of girls that whoever would light a candle Friday night and bring back a note from their mother would get a prize. Okay, so this one girl, I have no idea what her name is. She's never mentioned in the story what her name is. This is 1967, 68. Goes home and asks her mom if she can light Friday night candles that week. And her mom says, no, we don't do that. So came back. All the other girls in class came back with their notes, and they all got prizes. But little so-and-so did not have a note, and she did not get a prize. And she was very upset. So she said, again, to her mother, can we light Shabbos candles this week? And she said, no, we don't do that. So on the way home from school on Friday, she stopped off at the local grocery store, which was run by a Latin American of sorts, a person of Latin American persuasion, and said, I want a Jewish candle. Now, the proprietor had no idea what a Jewish candle is because there's no such thing as a Jewish candle. But he happened to know that he has these things, that there's these candles in glasses that Jews light. When somebody passes away, it is customary that on the day of their passing to mark it by lighting a candle and saying, in memory of so-and-so, the child of so-and-so, because the soul is like a candle. So he says, okay, this is the Jewish candle I got. So family went out Friday night. The girl stayed home. Time came for lighting the candles. She lit the candle, said the blessing, put the candle right in the center of the table. She was very happy. Okay, so the parents came home, and they see a fire going on in the living room, in the dining room. And they run in, they see it's a yard site candle. It's a memorial candle. So the girl had gone to sleep already. So they marched her into the living room, the dining room, and said, "What's the meaning of this?" So the girl said, classic line, "You wouldn't light a candle for me, so I lit a candle for you." Now, the mother, being aware of what this type of candle was, and the daughter not, is all set in innocence, explained to her what this candle was about and said, "If it's so important to you, we will indeed begin lighting candles on Friday night next week." And they did. And after that, they started doing little more things. Friday night candles comes with a Friday night meal, a kiddush, a challah, a chicken soup. And then the father began staying home on Shabbos. And then the family eventually became religious. The mother is now, this woman is now a grandmother living in the Crown Heights section of Brooklyn. And everybody lived happily ever after, all from one candle. That's going to do it. We're glad you tuned in. I hope it had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope it had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have a great week. We hope again to see you again next week. And if you're interested in knowing, behind me is Yitzhak Perlman playing "On the Way is a Tree," a classic Yiddish song. Take care. We'll see you again.